Rebecca.
And I'm Kaylin.
And you are tuning in to Sociologic here on CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from the very top of Burnaby Mountain.
We're stoked to be your host for the next hour, exploring local and global events using sociological perspectives. Thanks for tuning in.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Sociologic here at CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where we are broadcasting on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples. You can listen online at cjsf.ca or on our radio app, which you can download from the app or Google Play Store, depending on your device. So welcome to today's show. I'm Rebecca. I'm going to be your host for the next hour up until 8 p.m. And yeah, welcome. I hope you're all having a great day or a good start to your day, wherever you are tuning in from, whatever the time is where you are. I like to do this thing on my show that I started with my co-host Kaylin, who unfortunately no longer is in Vancouver to do sociologic. But we started doing this thing that I've kept going. I've kept it going just by myself or sometimes with DJ Coco from a Slumber Party sometimes joins me. But it is to talk about one thing that we are grateful for, one thing that's brought us happiness or joy in the past week. And yeah, I encourage you all to think of something whilst I tell you mine. Maybe it's as simple as you found a new song that you're really enjoying, or I don't know, you got to have a nap. Sometimes it is small things like that. But for me, I had quite an exciting weekend. It's one of my last weekends here in BC because I am leaving in just under a month now, which is crazy to me that I've nearly been here a whole year. It's completely flown by, but I'm filling up my weekends with lots of exciting activities and stuff to do before I go. And Saturday, I finally went to the aquarium in Stanley Park. And I didn't just go to the aquarium on like an ordinary day. I went for the fish and sips event, which in my proper English fashion went when alcohol was involved in a main, I guess, fueling point to the event. It is a 19 plus event where the aquariums open after hours and you get alcohol and you get to wander around and look at all of the enclosures and all the animals. And there was a DJ there and it was all lit up really beautifully. And I went with a bunch of my friends and yeah, it was really fun. I have a love now of sea otters. I think they left me by the sea otter enclosure for a shameful amount of time. I was a bit obsessed and I now have a sea otter little stuffed toy that my friend got for me, which was very kind of him. So yeah, that brought me a lot of joy. I've been dying to see a sea otter. I haven't seen one yet. So even though it wasn't in the nature in the wild, I was still very, very glad to have seen it. So yeah, that is what brought me joy. I got to spend some lovely time with my friends. One of the last times I'm going to see a lot of them actually. And I got to see a sea otter and I got to drink alcohol in an aquarium, which I've never done before. So it was very, very fun and exciting. And I hope you all had a good weekend or you all had something that brought you joy this past week and weekend. Now, for tonight's topic, I was a bit inspired by a interview that I did for Intravenous, which is the women and gender radio show on a Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. here. And it was an interview that I did with a professor, or I think she was an associate, no, an assistant professor in the sociology and anthropology department at Simon Fraser University. A Dr. Amanda Watson, and we had a conversation regarding a need for recognition of unpaid labor in order to progress towards gender equality. And so this got me thinking, and it was a really interesting discussion. If you want to have a listen to it, I strongly recommend you do. It's on the intravenous playlist on the cjsf.ca website. If you want to have a listen to that episode, the interview is all there. She had some really interesting and insightful things to say. And yeah, it got me thinking about it. And I thought a lot more about what unpaid labor is happening, how capitalism is fueling this, and how it's not being spoken about. And obviously, Kaylin and I created this show to be about sociology, and we've spoken about some sociological theories, Marxism being one of them, which is one of our theory deep dives on the sociologic playlist on the website, if you want to listen to that as well. Shamelessly promoting a load of things right now. But I started to think a lot more about Marxism and a lot more about capitalism, and came across an article called The Gendered Economy. Now, it's actually a series of articles by Lakshmi Pillia Gupta that were released between March and April of this year, actually. And they explore different ways in which capitalism has shaped women's lives, their labor, their financial independence. And with each article, so each article is titled The Gendered Economy. And then each one goes into like depth on uncovering a hidden economic structure that is keeping women at a financial disadvantage. So there's quite a few on there, and I recommend anyone to go read them. I'm going to talk about the first one, which was released on March 12th this year, 2025, and it was titled The Gendered Economy: Women Built This Economy, But Who's Paying Them? To talk a bit about this unpaid labor force that we're seeing with women and housework and things like that, and going into the kind of historical, I guess, timeline of it, like following the historical events that happened and shaped this to what we're seeing now. So I found this article fascinating, and I want to talk a bit about some of the stuff that was mentioned in that. It's broken up very clearly into different chapters, kind of just going through history. And then I want to talk a bit about why it's so prevalent now, in regard to, I had this interview obviously with Dr. Amanda Watson, and what caused me to go into this interview and have this topic, and its like relevance to Canada. So that is tonight's topic. I hope you will find it as interesting as I did. It's not something I ever thought about in my nearly five years of studying sociology. So it was quite nice to discover something new, especially because I've been so bogged down at the moment in, it's probably going to sound such a weird phrase, but in like sexual violence and gender inequity in that sense, and gender-based violence, because I'm doing a mini-series of interviews and discussions on that I feel like it's nice to be looking at a different avenue that maybe is not as hard-hitting and harsh as sexual violence is. As we all know, it's a very severe topic, so it's quite nice to take a break and look at something like this. But enough of me rambling on why I find this topic so interesting. I'm going to start us off with some songs before we get into it, as I always do. So we are going to start off with a song that I found from the playlist. It is called Survival of the Fittest by Art D'Echo off of the album Serene Demon. And it's kind of this new wave dance rocky song. But I've really been enjoying listening to it, so I hope you guys all do too. And I'll probably play maybe another song after that. I haven't quite decided on which one yet, so that will be a surprise. And then we'll get right into the topic. So here is Survival of the Fittest.
Thank you. Well, it's getting late and I don't recognize this place, but I'm feeling like I might just recognize your face. Or maybe I just want to. Either way, it's the only one I do. See, I'm on my alone, I've no battery on my phone, and I was sort of hoping maybe you could help me find my way. Oh man, I just need to find my way. And if we do, you can join me if you want to. And see, I'm feeling strange, cause I've just watched the colours change. But dearest Juliet, you've always made me feel the same. For every single minute of the last two that I've known you, that I've known you. And I was hoping maybe you might know how to save me. And I know we've never met, but tell me where you've been just lately. Cause I've missed you all my life, I've just never realized it till tonight. Tell me where you've been just lately, cause I've missed you all my life. I've just never realized it till tonight.
And welcome back to Sociologic here on CJSF 90.1 FM campus and community radio from Simon Fraser University. And that song you just heard was called Hoping Maybe by The K's off of their album I Wonder If The World Knows. And they are a indie rock band from Merseyside near Liverpool back in the UK. And just a reminder of the first song that we heard this evening, which was Survival of the Fittest by Art Deco off of the album Serene Demon. And that was a Canadian song. I'm not 100% sure where in Canada, but it was Canadian, which is always great to hear. And yeah, let's jump straight into tonight's topic of the gendered economy. And I had a quote that I kind of wanted to just start off with because it was from the article. And I feel like it just sums it up perfectly in looking at capitalism and the gendered economy, which is women's labor is economically invisible but socially mandatory. And I just feel like it perfectly sums it up in that this area of unpaid labor, this unpaid workforce is mandatory for society to be able to function. Society is based off of it in order to function effectively, yet there's no recognition of it. There's no financial reward or anything associated with it. So if we're looking at this article by Lakshmi Pillia Gupta, talking about how women built this economy, but who's paying them, we look at the first chapter of this article is titled The Economy Women Built. And it talks about this framework in that every economy has this kind of invisible scaffolding, and it holds everything together, but is rarely getting recognized. And that is essentially what this unpaid labor workforce is that women are contributing to. So if women disappeared from the global workforce today, the world would come to a standstill. But if women stopped performing the unpaid labor, within 24 hours, economies would collapse. And this is because the article makes you question, who raises the future workers? Who cares for the elderly, cooks, cleans, organizes, households, ensures the seamless functioning of day-to-day life? Majority of the time, it's women. It's your mothers, your grandmothers, your aunts. And the issue with it is that none of this is paid. None of it's recognized. None of it is counted as, quote, like, productive labor in economic terms. So there are some shocking statistics in looking at this, in that women are contributing at least $10.8 trillion worth of unpaid labor annually, which is three times the global tech industry. But it's actually, this work is classified as a personal responsibility rather than as an economic pillar. And so if you're looking at it in this sense, in that it's three times the global tech industry and isn't recognized in any monetary value at all, it's shocking. And the devaluation of this women's labor, it's not a mistake. It's not like a slight error in the system that shouldn't have happened. It was a feature. It was an intentional product of the capitalist design that has shaped this kind of financial realities of women for centuries. Because it's not a recent thing, it's been going on for a while. And it's not just economically either. If you look at women's rights movements and the waves of feminism that have been happening since the 20th century, you can see that it's not just, as much as this article is focusing on the financial realities, the capitalist design has got a lot of features oppressing women in different ways in order for society to function. So the kind of next chapter of this article goes into the starting point of where it kind of all started. So it's called The Economic Playbook That Made Women's Work Invisible. And so again, like I said, it's like the starting point of where this came from. So it's like at some point, women lost ownership of their labor. And the article says that it was a strategic transformation of the economy to strip women of their financial independence, whilst at the same time making their unpaid contributions essential to society's function and survival in capitalism. Because in pre-capitalist societies, you saw work, it was largely communal, it was largely interdependent, and it was, whether it was like trade, whether it was skilled crafts or agriculture, both men and women were in this, quote, productive labor that was recognized and a necessity for survival. So you had many women that were artisans, traders, healers, playing a crucial role in the local economies. But for capitalism to thrive, it required a cheap and disciplined workforce. This needed a strict polarizing divide in the people that owned those workforces. And if we're looking at Marxism, you would call them the bourgeoisie, and those who only had their labor to sell, which are the proletariats. And you can look at the intersectionality, and this can be applied to so many inequalities of class, gender, ethnicity, etc. But this was all achieved by redesigning family structures economic roles, pushing women out of financial independent work. Now, you move on to the 16th and 17th century and you get into the witch hunts. And it's like, this article talks about how the economy criminalized female autonomy during this period of witch hunts. So you had tens of thousands of women being persecuted as witches across Europe, especially those who were widows, healers, or landowners. Now, that's funny that all of those women would have been economically independent, the widows, the healers, and the landowners, because midwives and like herbalist healers were providing health services outside of the male-dominated medical profession. So they were not dependent on men. They were not dependent on male-run institutions to be surviving. Widows were no longer under a financial control of their husband, so they were often managing property and finances that was left from their husband. Now, this categorization of women who had a trade, so such as like herbal medicine or being a midwife, where she can support herself, be respected in her community, was suddenly labeled a witch. And it was because, when you look at it this way, it was a representation of an alternative economic structure. It was a representation of a different life for women where they could be financially independent. They didn't have to be living in the shadows of their male counterparts in capitalism. And this alternative economic structure, one of where women had control over their labor, over their finances, it goes directly against what the capitalist structure was just designed to ensure. Women relying on men economically. And therefore, obviously that can't stand, God forbid, it had to be removed, hence the witch hunts. And you had these women that were clearly representing this alternative structure, an alternative way of life, suddenly being hunted and labeled in a very bad light and things like that. And this demonized women's independent work. It doesn't make it seem like an desirable way of life to have. And the demonizing of this independent work for women forces them into this domestic dependence to ensure that they become unpaid caregivers. So they are ensuring that women are fulfilling this role where they have to put a ton of effort and work in and not get recognized or paid for in order to keep a workforce going, in order to keep the capitalist society moving effectively and functioning. So this results obviously in financial independence being ripped away from women in the name of societal stability, because it would ruin society if women were financially independent from men. And again, there's another great quote in this article, which it made me smile. It made me laugh when I first read it, because it, to me, couldn't be more true, in that it was a quote, "Witch hunts were a misogynistic moral panic." And for those of you that don't know what a moral panic is kind of, it's this, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. So when I learned what a moral panic was, I learned of it in relation to the media causing moral panics, which I feel like is the best example to use. But essentially, there will be a small issue happening. The media will amplify that issue and blow it up. And the public reaction will be like a public outcry over it. And it makes it sensationalizes and amplifies the issue way beyond what it was. So an example would be in 2011, the London riots that happened. The media needed a kind of scapegoat. It needed someone to blame. And so they blamed people wearing hoodies. And it became this whole mass hysteria of young people wearing hoodies were dangerous to society. They were the rioters. They were violent. They were aggressive. And it was like youths in hoodies are these big feared group in society, because there was like one photo of a person wearing a hoodie taking part in the riot. And it blew up all over news articles and things like that. So that's kind of what the moral panic is. So I personally love that quote. I think that quote is a great quote, summing up witch hunts, in that men were scared of women diverting away from the capitalist structure and finding their alternative ways around it with their independent work and not being dependent on men and not fulfilling the roles that men wanted them to fill. So they created this whole fear-mongering that they were all witches and things like that to cause a mass hysteria on it. So that was basically what the next section of the article was all about. It was talking all about the witch hunts and kind of how it was criminalizing female autonomy to do what they wanted, to be financially independent, to be their own people, their own person. And it then moved on into talking about they called it the housewifization, of women. And it was talking about how turning unpaid labor into an obligation. So it was kind of moving towards into the Industrial Revolution, where capitalism went through a change again. And it was with machinery was like transforming production. Capitalism needed this stable, dedicated workforce. And to guarantee that men could work those long hours in the factories and be that stable, dedicated workforce, someone had to be at home managing everything else. And people might say, put that managing everything else for free. So this is where the nuclear family model was born. It came into practice as an economic necessity, with capitalism needing men in the factories as much as possible to operate all of this machinery. So this repositioned women out of paid labor into housewives and mothers and unpaid domestic help. And it was presented as the, quote, natural role of women, not as an economic exclusion. So you can link this very clearly to traditional stereotypes of women. The traditional stereotypes of women are that we're caring, compassionate, calm, loving, maternal, passive. All of those are associated with mothers and housewives and doing all of the caregiving and